Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
And
to today's top story.
And. Wait, do you have any like annoying plugs for concerts?
Of course.
I mean like performances.
Of course, ladies and gentlemen. What's today's date? Okay, a couple quick ones real quick. October the 20th, I'm at Griselda Land, a.k.a. Buffalo, New York.
Right.
It's a Wednesday, and they're trying to shut the site down, so I got to prove I could bring the people out. So Wednesday, October the 20th, Buffalo Helium Comedy Club.
Mm-hmm.
The 21st, I'm at my second new home,
okay,
which is Burlington, Vermont. It's not my home yet. It's a wishful thinking.
Okay.
Burlington, Vermont, that's going down October 21st at the Vermont Comedy Club.
Bring your granola and your Ben & Jerry's. Pond
Bro,
cock.
Listen, you don't have to remind those people.
It's there.
They come stacked.
Okay.
And then November 3rd, I'm in Goodnights in Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh.
Well, how about
North
this?
Carolina.
How about this? I have a plug as
Wait,
well.
Wait, one more. I just got to do my New York one every Wednesday night. Me and my boy Will Silvins from the Talk Clearly a podcast got a show called The Chemistry Set. It's a very funny new formula for stand-up comedy at the Comedy Cellar every Wednesday, 10:30. Rosenberg, go. Get that money. Get that money.
Here we go. Real Late Live. I'm finally doing a concert album celebration.
Finally.
Gramercy Theater. Wednesday, November 24th.
Oh, word?
That's the day before Thanksgiving for you and
You're
me.
You're doing Gramercy?
Styles P the Ghost.
Ooh.
Mayhem Loren.
Uh-huh.
Crime Apple. Flea Lord.
Right.
Special guests, Styles P's peoples, the Hoodies, my man Jay Nice from the album. Special guests, I'm hoping Cypher Sounds will DJ a set.
Oh, I'm coming.
I
didn't know it was at Gramercy.
I
didn't know we was doing it big time.
Oh yeah, baby. And it's the night before Thanksgiving, so people want a party. Let's just have a party. In addition to the performance.
I thought you were gonna be at Ricky's Babaloo in Parsippany, New Jersey. I didn't know you was doing Gramercy Theater.
Now, real quick, before we get this thing started, I gotta bring in Billy June for one question. Hey, Billy June.
Yes.
Nope, I'm not complaining, I'm not angry. You're doing a great job. Terrific job. I know it's so weird though. I saw we hit the 500 Patreon number, went over it.
Okay.
And then I looked
before you even said it, we hit it.
And then I looked last night and it had dropped all the way down.
I haven't looked.
What does drop all the way down mean?
It means that as of 3 days ago, it said I saw 504.
Looking right now.
I looked right now, it says 463.
Ooh, that's a big drop.
So, what's going on? Is it just something?
Are we not delivering?
It can't be that. It can't be that.
Are we not delivering?
Now,
wow, I saw that.
Are that many people offended by David Banner's vaccine stance?
I don't think so. It can't be.
Like, I mean, it's a guest's opinion. People can have opinions. What are we supposed to do? It couldn't be that.
No.
I feel like at some point you hit a certain number where you don't notice when people drop, but right now we're at a spot where it's... But also, it's
100% not any type of rancer.
Yeah, that wasn't an answer. It dropped off by 40 in 2 days.
Also, October 1st.
October 1st. No, that is, he's right. That's what it is.
Before.
They're all like, oh, I'm going to dip before I get charged again.
And then they come back sometimes, or we never know?
Yes, they come back a lot.
They don't get a month free or nothing like that, right?
No, nothing.
Yo, y'all, come on, man. And I saw a comment this week on Twitter, too. Yo, shout out to Juan Epp, Cypher Sounds and Rosenberg. You know, I've been down forever. The first podcast I ever listened to, I still listen to this day. And no, I still won't pay for Patreon.
Wow.
They're like proud to not support. I'm like, I mean, we've given you 200 episodes, you know, interviews with the greatest of all time. And by go ahead, Billy June.
That's why I hate when you say the number, because literally every time you say the number, the next time we talk about it, it dipped.
Well, here's the number.
It's always the end of the month. You're right. We got to build back up.
Here's the number you need to know. 750.
750.
Come on. We not like one of them $15 Patreon. We not like our OnlyFans.
No. 750. And by the way, I have a hunch that the stories we get today, if we don't make it all into the main episode and it continues into Patreon, I think people are going to be very, very tight. Also, big celebration coming up. How about this? We'll get more into details later because we got to bring the guest on. But November 9th, New York Comedy Festival, Juan Epp Live, baby. Live show.
Now you talking. We at the Stand Comedy Club. Now listen, this is a place I perform at regularly. Actually, all weekend long.
Hold on. Let's do this later. Don't do the entire biography of the Stand now.
All weekend long, I'm there with Dave Chappelle's Secret Shows.
Oh, I heard about. But by the time this comes out, it's over.
Oh, you missed it. You should have got on our Patreon. Damn, we told you all about it last week.
Did you? No, he's lying. All right, guys.
I'm saying represent for the fam. From crazy ass Queens, you know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm saying? One sound for your mind. Check it out. Yeah. For those who don't know the way I flow, my name's fucking Mike Geronimo.
Fucking Mike Geronimo.
This shout out to my whole fam, you know what I'm saying? I'm representing.
Y'all know who you is. Syph, would you say that our guest, Mike Geronimo, Queen's finest, is my girl just kicked her leg in the air in Queen solidarity. She just kicked her leg up. Would you say Mike Geronimo is one of those artists, Syph, that like when someone knows Mike Geronimo, you know that it's someone who had the proper hip hop connoisseur taste.
Correct. 100%.
That's the
100%.
What? Yo, you were Mike Geronimo was like, you were in that list of my favorite, like, underground rap music for real rap heads.
Upper level underground. Like, but upper underground level. Underground that you could play in the clubs that everyone loved. You know what I mean?
But hold on.
I appreciate that.
There's a lot to get to. First of all, Syph, how is this the first time we've ever had Mike Geronimo on official?
Because we suck as human beings and as broadcasters and journalists and podcasters.
Look, that's neither here nor there. I'm on the Epstein podcast right now. Okay. So there's this exuberance that's like underneath all of this, that's just hulking to explode. So I'm just glad to be here.
We're going to talk
about these numbers too, Bill.
What numbers? Still,
the numbers we was just going over. And if there's ever any special David Chappelle show that no one knows of it, tell your friend Mike.
Because Mike's out here. Mike's in these streets. Always has been.
I'm in the streets.
That is something that's always been true.
He's outside.
He's outside. Syph, let's start from the very beginning, Mike Geronimo. Okay. You first came into my purview at the time, young DJ in the mid-90s with that record that we just played with Shit's Real. That was the first time I was familiar with you, with Blunt Recordings, with TVT, with Royal Flush. anything related to that, the things that came later that I didn't even realize at the time, Irv Gotti, et cetera, all of that. Sife, did you have any, did you know any Mike Geronimo prior to that? Were you aware of him before that single?
No, I mean, what year did that record come out?
94?
94
or 95.
Yeah, 95. I think it was 94.
Yeah, I was just a young buck in the game, man. I was watching DJ Riz cut that up on WBAU.
Riz, shout out to Riz. My guy.
Yeah, but that did set off an you know what's funny, Mike?
What's
I'm
up?
Glad you're here because your story is similar to our story where we set off so much shit that is now extremely huge and popping. And might not get the credit we deserve.
You're at the beginning of a lot of stuff, Mike. Ja Rule, Hov, Irv Gotti. A lot of stuff starts around DMX. The Mike Geronimo time. DMX.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm just thankful I was in the right place at the right time. That's all, bro.
So how did it start? And where was the? Yeah. It was Flush. Where exactly was it?
Well, I grew up in Flushing, you know, and
are you Chinese?
No, right? Oh. Right? Like, but you got to understand, Sipes, like when I was coming up in Flushing, it was different.
Right.
It was more, you know, you had a little bit of everything. It wasn't what it is now, right? You know what I mean? No disrespect. It just wasn't what it was now.
No, it's just like in today's era.
Yeah, today is like, different.
It's almost more Chinatown than Chinatown.
And anything, I feel
authentic, not Chinatown.
Right. Like I feel like a stranger when I go through there. That, but anyway, so I was born in Flushing and raised there for the most part, and then I ended up moving to Bayside when I was in my teenage.
Are you Korean?
Are you Korean?
Nah, it's just all full blood, what you see, what you get. But long story short, we ended up moving to Bayside because my dad was in the military. And because of that, I went to Bayside High School. From Bayside High School, I met my man Chucky Madness from Hollis, and he knew Irv Gotti. And Chucky Madness was a DJ in Queens that was like popping at the time. So he found out I could spit, and I just started going to his crib in Hollis on the weekends, like, you know, just rhyming while he would cut different beats up. And I guess he must have told Irv about me or whatever. And then I did some talent.
Who was Irv?
Yeah, so who was Irv?
I didn't know Irv, Sife. Like before.
Yeah, he wasn't that big. He was just like another DJ around the way.
Yeah, I think, you know, from what I came to learn, he was DJing in the park at jams here and there. And, you know, he was think with like Hov in him and going on tour a little bit and stuff like that. So he had already had figuratively his feet wet with them.
Right.
Before me, bro.
Right.
Like I wasn't gunning for none of that. I was just spitting, you know. Mm-hmm. So I guess Chuck had told Irv I was doing some talent show that, like, Chuck put me in. I didn't even know I was doing the talent show. Like, I just came in his crib, and he's like, yo, we going to do it. I was like, all right, cool. And we went to 109 in Liverpool. That's where the talent show was.
109 in Liverpool. Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to be around there, bro.
All right.
We don't want to be
around. It's not a place to be around.
Somewhere we don't want to be. Okay, got it.
Duly noted.
I like to mark down those neighborhoods.
What's the joint that's out there? Power. It's like if you're watching Book of Canaan and all of that. Like,
okay.
That's the area where the talent show is, where they're showing it, in Southside. And I ain't get booed, and I was like the only one nobody ain't throw records at or bottles at.
What'd you rhyme on? Do you remember what beat you rhymed on?
Actually, it's funny because I wrote a song called Mike Geronimo, Microphone Geronimo, and that came from the name, and it was over the beat for Barry White playing your game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We just cut and playing your game up. And I finished, and the auditorium was dumb quiet. And I was like, okay. And I just heard somebody like, yo, you got another song? And everybody was just like, yeah, do another one. So I just started freestyling, and Irv was there. And that's how I met him. And He said he had a studio, and I was drunk, so I just started spitting in his ear, like, just freestyling, and he was just smiling. He's like, yo, you know, you need to fuck with me in the studio, blah, blah, blah. And then a shootout broke out, and we all got separated. So maybe a couple weeks after that, he had called me, and he was like, every day calling me like, yo, why don't you try the studio thing? If you don't like it, you don't gotta go. You know, you don't have to do it anymore. And I went, and the first time I went, we did Shit's Real. And then the rest was history.
The first time you went, you did Shit's Real?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Shit's Real was like the first song I ever in my life ever recorded in a studio. It was really the first time I ever recorded. I had been.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, so.
Wow, yeah, that's right.
We was doing it.
Good job, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks, bro.
You know what's funny? Did you watch the Wu-Tang show?
I was about to say the same thing.
I heard about it, but I haven't seen it yet. But
bro, the funny thing is...
Go ahead. I'm pulling it up.
They showed a RZA when he was Prince Rakim before, you know, he formed Wu-Tang. And the single he had, Ooh, We Love You, Rakim, was over the same sample... As
here we, Saif,
somebody
about,
told me that I think
listen,
it was Denise
listen, here you go.
And
listen,
they
listen.
Couldn't clear it.
Listen.
So then that they changed it, but originally the one that made him pop was the same sample.
That's crazy. You know what's funny too, bro? I think somebody tweeted that to me or something. It's like, yeah. Yo, how did you get the sample cleared and he couldn't?
Too many ladies. I've got to learn to say no.
I remember this. And that's crazy because now that I never caught on to that, bro.
And it's funny, it's so much better than the later version. It really was.
Time is moving slow, life is a drag. There's money to make and more girls to bag. Fully aware, so I step up on the square. Looking for what? The cootie in the chair. Flex and I flex on the opposite sex. Hit him up quick and step to the next. It seems I'm a fiend for a sex routine. Love to hit him scream.
Yo, it's crazy.
Hey, how'd you get that one? How'd you get that one?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, that's dope. Yeah, because in the show...
Yeah, I never heard that version.
Me neither.
I remember the video. Like, I remember seeing the video on Video Music Box.
It was a different beat. They had to change the beat for the video.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But it's like when you watch, like, if you're a hip hop fan and you watch that show, everybody, as soon as he plays that demo and he gets the record deal with Tommy Boy, I know for a fact everybody thinks of you because that's like, oh, that's the Shit's Real beat.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's
crazy.
Salute RZA, man.
And he couldn't clear it.
Yeah, somebody had asked me about it. Like, somebody asked me how we were able to. And I was like, yo, I don't know.
I don't know. That's not your business.
That wasn't my department. I just go spend, you know. But shout out to RZA. That's cool.
And that song was produced by Irv. He did everything on the production of that?
For the most part, like the story, I was always kind of a little foggy on the origin of the beat because Chuck told me that he had came up with the idea of the sample, and Irv said he came up with the idea for the sample, and I know that Irv definitely programmed it like with the drums and I was there for that, you know. So there was always
who said they came up with the idea for the sample.
My man Chuck that introduced
Chuck.
Him.
Right.
So he was like, he's the one that was like, yo, Mike Sharam over Free.
So
I don't know how, you know, I wasn't there for that, but it's just always been some sort of discrepancy between those.
I mean, listen, this is the music business, so the record books say it's Irv Gotti, that's for sure.
But picking a sample is like back then, especially because you rhyme over the whole loop, so you can't really claim.
I'm just like, at the end of the day, whoever was the one who was on the machine, to me, that's the person who did it.
Yeah.
You know,
So you guys, you recorded it in 93. It ends up coming out. It says here, according to Wikipedia, the single was released on June 10th, 1994.
Was it?
So it says, which sounds right to me, because I feel like I was playing it all the way into 95. Like, it was definitely moving.
Right.
And then Master IC came out in 95. We'll get there. But So you guys were just running around shopping a deal with that single? Was that like the thing you guys were bringing to labels?
We did. We actually ended up, I think, I want to say we did maybe 3 more songs. So we did a B-side called Hem and Heads.
Of course, I love Hem and Heads.
And we did another song called For My Niggas, which ended up being You're Only a Customer by Jay-Z.
Wow.
Yeah, so I did that beat. And then I think we used one song that I did with Cash Money Click called Represent. And it was just like, we was just freestyling. So it was me, Ja, Chris Black, O. And we were just really freestyling, but it ended up turning into a song. And then I think from there, Irv, you know, he was talking to the labels or whatever, but I just remember him coming to me one day and be like, yo, this shit ain't moving fast enough. Like, I'm gonna press this shit up on my own. And I was like, how are we gonna do that? And he's like, I don't know, I'm gonna figure it out. And next thing you know, he pressed it up. And, you know, then we was running around. We would go up to Hot. We would go up to BLS. We would
and this is a white club. Label. So this is a white label. This is.
It was not. Yeah, it was a black label to be exact. It was a black label with silver lettering, and it had the this Mike Geronimo logo we came up with really quick. And yeah, we took it to everybody. Oh,
the record was out before you were signed.
Yeah. Yeah, because we was taking it to the clubs. We was taking it to, we went to Flex. Flex used to do, I think, the Palladium, shit like that. So we would go to every DJ that was in New York. He would take me to the club. He'd be like, yo, take the 12-inch, go give it to him, introduce yourself. And he would go in front of Hot 97 and every other radio station and just sleep there till he saw who he needed to see. And he'd jump out and then give him and hit him with the record.
Yo, it's I see it on Discogs. None are available for sale, but I see this record y'all put on. Y'all squeezed a lot on that 12-inch too. 4 versions on the A side, 4 versions on the B side. I don't know about this logo, Mike. I don't know. I'm glad I can see why this wasn't the long-term logo.
Nah, that wasn't the long-term. That was just like, yo, here, let's get this out there. Like, all right, cool. You know, so it was what it was. But yeah, you know, Irv was just big on the time is now. We can't wait on anybody. And so that's how we move.
Dope.
And how did it end up being Blunt TVT? How did that end up being the thing?
We were hearing from, it got to a point where we started to hear from a couple of different labels. And if memory serves me correct, I think we went to maybe 2 of them, 3 of them. I remember going to Wild Pitch. And I remember Search was very big on me coming up there. But something had jumped off, like, right while we were at Wild Pitch that day. And we, like, were like, okay, we don't want any parts of this. So it was good on that note.
And you mean like, label drama popped off between, like, artists and the label?
Yeah. Like, a group that was signed on a label, the management had came. And I think the bro's name was Stu Fine that owned Wild Pitch.
Fine, yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Stu was there, and
the dudes came up there while you were up there.
Yeah, and they wilded out. You know, and police came and
what?
Like, all this, shit. Yeah.
Oh, what
a terrible impression to make on Mike Geronimo and Irv Gotti.
Yeah, I felt so bad for them, bro, because I was like, this is like way more than awkward. You know what I mean? So, and I just remember thinking, if I were like Search or Stu, like, how I would feel with all of this mayhem going on when you're trying to land someone here. Yeah. So I remember just trying to do my best to make them feel like, oh, it's no big deal. And I, you know, yeah, like somebody it's trying okay. to stab you. It's okay. That happens. You know? And then we left it. I remember we got in the van and I just looked at her and I was like, nah, bro, I ain't going up there. He just laughed. He's like, nah, fuck that. You know, so, and then we sat and we met with TVT. I believe Loud was interested in us at the time, but they weren't fully asserted just yet.
Right.
But I know that Steve Rifkin had like a real desire to have me sign there. So I always remember that.
I got to tell you, in retrospect, Syph, Mike Geronimo on Loud is sort of a great fit in retrospect.
Yeah, I mean, listen, man, we all look back and we know everything that came from all these labels and all the great songs, the classic records. But back mm-hmm. then, it was just uncharted territory.
Territory, of course.
There's like, no way to know.
Every label was the same. It was like some white dude that liked hip hop. and God, you know, God bless them. They helped put the music out that we now love to this day. Yeah. But they were all the same. They were all like, oh, this music seems to be the music the kids like nowadays. Let's put some records out.
But that is, do you think ultimately the reason Loud turned out to be a better place is because instead of it being the old guy who liked this music and thought it was for the kids, it was the son of someone like that who was younger and got it himself? Yeah.
I believe that's part of it, but also it's also luck. You know what I mean? Like, who knows, man? But he was a little younger, so he was like, mm-hmm. like when you're younger like that, Wu-Tang and Mobb Deep wilding out is kind of fun in the office. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? But when you're when you hit your late 30s, 40s, you're like, get these motherfuckers out of here.
Or you just don't go to the office. You're like, I ain't going up there. Cool. Cool.
Yeah. Wild Pitch, yeah. Loud,
Priority. Yeah. It was a lot of labels back then.
It was
then.
A lot of labels at the time.
Select Records.
Relativity.
Relativity. Yeah,
they were all similar, man.
Yeah. You ain't never lied. It was definitely like looking at the same person on different blocks. You know what I mean? So
Tommy Boy
as well, but I think that's what set TVT apart when we sat down with them.
Which why? What?
That way.
Why did that set it apart?
What
was it that set it apart?
For me, I can't say what it was for Irv, but for me, I think it was me sitting with Steve Gottlieb and we just had a good talk.
Yeah.
And
that's really what it is.
Yeah, he just seemed like, you know, like he believed in what we were doing and he just seemed like, you know, he believed in putting me in the position of being like the first hip hop artist on his brand new label. Right. You know, and that was a point that Irv kept driving home. He's like, yo, you're going to be the first.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. You're going to be the first of the first.
Yeah, the first matters.
Right. And again, though, I'm young, bro. And like I said, I wasn't expecting any of the things that were recurring. I just went and did it. So, I mean, all in all, out of everybody we talked to, they just felt like the place to be. Mm-hmm. And they just felt like the most sincere, you know. And again, I have to reiterate, I was very young. I'd never known what it is to sit in front of record executives, let alone the record deal. So there wasn't much that I could hold comparable to sitting down.
Right.
But all in all, they seemed sincere. They seemed genuine. They seemed like they wanted us to win. So
yeah, it's funny because this is 93. Uh-huh. It's like there was no YouTube.
Nah.
There was no documentaries. Like now you can watch so many documentaries on how labels treat artists and how artists need to handle their business.
It wasn't even street teams at that point, to be honest with you, because Loud was the ones I think that revolutionized street teams along with. And then Bad Boy kind of like
jumped on
it. You know, they kind of mimicked what they saw and then they took it to another level. But it was none of that when we.
None of it, yep.
Nah, bro. Nah. Nah.
And now here's an important question. Mm-hmm. I'll ask it to both of you. Is Shit's Real by Mike Geronimo the most iconic of the Shit's Real that exists?
That's a good question. A
lot of shit
That's
is real.
I can't answer that. Like,
I'm not going to lie. I'm a big fan of the Black Moon Shit is Real.
Yo, right, because there's Black Moon, There's the premiere. I love the premiere
Fat Joe
that he did for Fat Joe. Like, that's one of my all-time favorite.
Yeah, me too.
That's a good song. Forever.
And
I went to visit my aunt and stuck up my cuz.
Right. Yeah, exactly. As you know, so yeah, like there's that one, and there's a lot of those, but I don't know if I'm the most iconic.
Wait, what's the Mike Geronimo record actually called?
Shit's Real with apostrophe.
Shit apostrophe. Is it with apostrophe?
Real. I think some people say shit is real, and then something I always say shit's real.
Yeah, shit.
No, it's apostrophe. This is the Black Moon one.
Yeah, that's the Black Moon. Boot camp clicks taking you on a real flight. 6 feet deep in the creek.
Come look me in the eye, brother, because I'm on my speed. That shit, that's just super hard.
That was good. That whole album was insane.
Yeah, that album was fire.
That album was fire. Shout out to Black Moon. Shout out to Mr. Walt, Evil Dead.
Yo, but your record, Shit Is Real. How successful did that record feel like it was? Like I loved it. It definitely seemed to give you a name in the hip hop in the hip hop world. Were you guys like, and the label, was everyone happy with Shit's Real and thinking like, this is big, this is the start of something big?
I definitely think overall that's what they felt, because a lot of things picked up in terms of support and intent after it came out. And it kind of, I mean, just on a personal note, it kind of like took me for a ride, because like I said, I wasn't expecting anything really.
And how old are you at the time? Like 18?
Like 17 going on 18.
Wow.
Shit.
And like I wasn't, so it just blew my mind. And then at the time, I remember there was this show called there was this channel called The Box, and you would have to call and you do like a 3-digit code and you can order your video. And the shit was on it all the time.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, once it started getting played on the radio, it just all took off like a rocket ship. Like, I didn't expect any of it. So it definitely pleased them at TVT. I think they were definitely happy. And I think it actually made them say, okay, maybe this warrants a lot more than even we were ready to throw behind it. And they were ready to throw everything, but I think Shit's Real's success made them say, okay, we have a shot at doing something that's really, really big. So we should do things that are really, really big and put whatever we need to behind it.
Do you remember what any of those things were? Like, do you remember them saying, we're going to do this? Even things that may have seemed like they thought it was going to be big, and in retrospect, it didn't mean shit, but at the time, it felt like it was going to be something.
I mean, with Shit's Real, I can't really remember. I think the only thing that I kind of remember, and I'm not even certain if it was Vendetta or if it was Natural. I just remember, well, no, with the Natural, they had gone and gotten like damn near every poster board for every subway station in New York City. So there was this like big blow up of the album cover, and they made it kind of look like it was a movie coming out. And they placed those in like every subway, and that was kind of crazy. And then I remember, I'm not certain if it was the first album or the second, but I remember they were like buying ad space during Knicks games on like MSG channel. Yeah, and at that time, that was like no one did that.
Right.
And the Knicks were good. So it's
And the Knicks were pretty good at that. So they were buying like maybe 10-second, 20-second ad spaces, like during, you know, when you'd see like a beer commercial at a Knicks game, or you would see the advertisers for the album. Wow. So they were doing stuff like that.
What is your favorite of the Shit's Real remixes? Because isn't there Cutmaster Kurt, and there's Computer Love?
There's Clark Kent. There's
See what the first one is on YouTube.
Is the Computer Love remix.
That's yeah, I think
that's it. Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
Is this Cutmaster? Is this one the Cutmaster Kurt?
I think so. There was like even a Fuji thing that never came out. It was like a version Wyclef did that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's one listed as Unknown Remix, and it's a picture of a white label. Let's see if this is legit.
A white man.
White label, sorry. White label.
I remember this too.
Yeah, who did this movie? Ooh. I'm trying to remember who did that.
Another day you step into the belly of the beast. I'll leave the compound and make my way to my stomping ground. I'm just about broke.
This one's gutter. It's very gutter.
I remember this, like, I remember like Stretch Armstrong or somebody playing that version.
Yeah, and I haven't heard it in so long, and I'm like, yo, I cannot remember who did that one, but there's a couple. There's a couple.
Where's the
you think it was
Computer Love? I gotta find that.
You think it was Zaytoven?
Exactly.
That'd be a neat trick. What would you
How would you do that? So how what were you and Irv like at this time? How tight did you guys get? Was it like a friendship? Was it like you know, he's the boss running the plays and you're trying to, you know, fit in? Like, I mean, and how did that work?
I think for me, I just think I always thought in terms of, like, friendship, you know, because, like I said, this wasn't what I thought I was going to end up doing in life. Like, this wasn't the direction that I even considered, you know, so I didn't know to say, let me write something and find a producer and then join forces and business wise that will equate to this, which will lead to that. And then we'll do it. It wasn't in the standard operating procedure of my thought process. So I only knew if you was cool and you was, you know, and I vibe, then we good. If we don't vibe, then I don't fuck with you. And that's how I was with everybody, you know. So for me, it was always friendship. And it was just cool to say, okay, here's somebody I'm meeting, I'm becoming a friend with, but we're also in this endeavor.
And were you signed to Irv? Like, did he do a deal with you? You were signed to TVT.
I signed to TVT. He had a production company called Top Dog Productions. Mm. And he also, I think, was trying to get in film with Hype. So they had like Top Dog Films and Top Dog Productions.
Yeah.
And so that was the production company. I didn't end up signing with his production. I signed directly to TVT.
But he was the producer.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Was he?
And
he was also managed you? Producer.
He kind of did everything.
Yeah.
And then it got to a point where, you know, like, I think it was actually my parents who suggested, they were like, you need a manager, you know, and then my cousin George was kind of managing this group called Children of the Corn at the time.
Here we go.
Your cousin was managing Children of the Corn.
Right. George Rowan. Shout out to George. Wow. And him and my other cousin, B.O. Barnes. Shout out to Barnes. And Barnes, ironically enough, ends up like dealing with Bad Boy and Puff, like tight, you know. But anyway, so my dad has suggested that, you know, George managed me. And then my cousin George took over doing that. And I think that's like the genesis of where a lot of friction started to develop.
I was just about to ask you, how did that go over?
It didn't really go over.
It didn't go over great.
It never does.
Yeah, it didn't go over well.
But this is fascinating to me, real quick. Sorry, Scythe, is that so your parents were in on this rap thing for you? Like, they were down and
not necessarily. Like, okay. My dad is funny. I remember the day
you had a dad?
My dad hurt Shiz rib.
Okay.
And the nigga like stood in the living room with me, looked at the radio, and he's like, all right, so where's the check? And I'm like, nigga, I was just on the radio. He's like, yeah, but where's the check? So my dad was more on, I think initially he was like, all right, here you go, being a harebrained teenager, doing what harebrained teenagers, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm doing this thing that, you know, and it's not, you, you know, you should, why don't you consider joining the service or, you know, my dad was a cop and he was in the army. So he pretty much wanted me to follow suit, you know, and either go into the service or either go into the, or go join the force.
And he's a cop where?
He started at Manhattan Task. That was like where he started. And that's actually how him and my cousin George, our dads, they're like, we're not blood related, but my dad and my uncle George, who was my cousin George's father,
right?
They were partners together.
Oh shit!
That's how they met. And
so
then,
your cousins, the same way your kids' cousins are cousins with Flush, Royal Flush's cousins,
exactly.
Royal Flush's kids.
So it's like,
Rosenberg, this is what black people do. I'll explain
this is
to you
what
later.
We do. Right. So
I wish I had this.
Yeah, and my mom was a school teacher. My stepmom, my real mom passed away when I was 9, but my birth mom rather. But yeah. My stepmom, she was a teacher, you know, in New York City. But my stepmom, she was real supportive of it. Like, she's actually the one they went and bought my brother and me, like 4 turntables and 2 mixers and 8 speakers and
all this
DJ equipment, which is what I did before I rhymed. I was DJing. So my stepmom was behind me 100%. My dad, not so much. But then I think when they started seeing the video playing and they
helped.
Right, help, and man. They're going to work in the car, and they, you know, they're hearing the song while they're driving to work. You know, it kind of changed a lot. So,
now they want to jump in and go, "Hey, it looks like this thing's doing something. You need to go. You need to go with your cousin. That's who we trust. Be with your cousin."
And it was 40p. I don't even think it was so much that as it was, okay, look, this is not like a fly by night thing. Like, I remember my dad telling me, like, well, you know, kid, you might have a real shot at something here. So I think I'm going to call Georgie and you guys should sit down and talk, and blah, blah, blah. And
I'm not mad at any of this. No. I'm not mad at this.
Can't be mad at it.
I think they were just doing what any parent would do. Like, if their child.
Yeah, good parent.
Right. And if their child somehow had stumbled onto something that could potentially, you know, grow into something where they don't have to worry about things.
Now, did George go on to do anything else in music?
He kind of did. Like, at that time, bro, it was funny because are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he kind of did. I'm sorry about that. I don't know who was in the room. He kind of did. He had like 3 other, 4 other acts besides me. And he actually was managing Flush too initially.
Oh.
Because after, you know, like I got on board, he knew like me and Flush were like attached at the hip. And I was like, you know, he needs a manager too. And he spits better than me. And you should manage him. So then he managed Flush too. And I think an R&B artist. But as he got involved, no.
Oh. Safe. No. Definitely not. Definitely.
I don't know. I get R&B.
Now,
Miss Jones.
Now, real quick. So then, how much did George being around? You said that was the beginning of your relationship with Irv being tarnished. Of course, it's interesting because your parents were doing what they felt was right, which is we want to get you around someone who we trust.
Absolutely.
And we know. Little did anyone know that. And who knows how it would have played out, but Irv Gotti went on to become this incredibly successful music executive and mogul, right? Now, that doesn't mean that y'all wouldn't have, it doesn't mean it would have worked out, but it is just funny that a parent's instinct, they're going to do what they think is the safest play.
What they think is that. Is that, like, I don't at all knock my parents for saying, we're concerned, and we you need to have safeguards in place.
Yeah, checks and balances.
Right, and I don't knock them at all for having a concern about me, my well-being, my future, you know, what could possibly occur. And truth be told, it wasn't so much the fact that I had went and got a manager outside of Irv. Irv actually was the one that had, for lack of a better, Irv kind of had done something or said something rather that it just gave me food for thought. And it kind of made me say, well, if you can say that, or if you can do that, then what happens down the road when we are successful? And so it was kind of just something that he did that kind of had me like, well, I don't know that I like what I just heard. And because of that, I think that's enough for me to say I'd rather go this way as opposed to that. And it was a very difficult decision to make, because I was kind of like, it kind of like felt like two parents getting divorced. Cause like, you know, I had my cousin who's my manager saying, you know, if you sign to the label, then you don't have to worry about getting screwed or not getting what you deserve. And then it was Irv on the other side of the fence, and I had known everything that he did and everything.
Oh, wait, your cousin came in when Shit's Real was just an indie underground record playing on the radio.
My cousin came in literally right before I either had to sign documents with Irv or sign documents with the label.
And yeah, so, that's rough. That's rough.
It was crazy.
And he pushed you to sign with TVT and not with Irv.
Yeah, because his the way he had informed me was, he said, look, if you're an artist and you're signed to a label, you're directly signed to that entity. And whatever money is due to you, it goes directly to you. And there's no question as to what you deserve. If you sign through a production company, the label gives them a check and they in turn can pay you what they see fit. So if they wanted to pay you $10,000, they could. If they wanted to pay you $10, they could do that too.
Yeah.
But it pretty much is based on what they see.
I've been in those situations many times, man. And right when the deal's about to happen, you bring someone else in.
Yeah. And again, like I said, I was a baby. I damn sure knew nothing about music. And even
how old was this George fella?
George at the time, I want to say, was maybe in his late 30s, going on his 40s.
Wait, that old?
Maybe mid 30s, late 30s. So he wasn't exactly super young.
But he also wasn't super experienced either.
No, he wasn't super experienced, and he didn't. It's not like, you know, like I had like Violator management or something like that.
Right.
Like, he wasn't that experienced. But with that being said, I think he was just looking at it from the perspective of, this is family and this is my artist.
Is and George white or black?
Nah, he black. He black. Super black.
So his father was a cop at 60 years old.
Nah, is that I might have the ages off, like with how old George was, but
no. But if George, dad, if George was 35, his dad George could have been 32, and his dad could have been 52.
Yeah, of course. I'm saying you're 17. Right. Anybody over 25 looks old as shit.
That's true.
Is that no? But you know, at that time, what I do know is like he was not in our age bracket. Like we do shit, and George would be like, "I don't understand y'all. Like, why do you smoke weed all day? I don't understand y'all. Why do you wear your clothes like that? I don't understand. Right. Why can't you get that anywhere? Why do you have to go to just this store?"
Yeah.
So kind of like, you know, and we'd be like, yeah, we'd put him on or whatever. What, right. But again, I don't knock him because, like I said, I think he was doing what anybody would have did, you know. And
bro, back then, man, yeah, that it's definitely a safer bet. It's a safer bet financially to go with the label, but
I wasn't even going to go with the label, as I said. I actually was going to go against the advice I was given from my parents and from my cousin. And I actually was opting to sign the contract with Top Dog. And then Irv and I had a discussion one night. And he says something that I just couldn't get past, that I couldn't say to myself.
If you keep fucking up, Mike, I can find another Mike Geronimo.
Nah, what he said was, I should have just made you sign a contract. Like, niggas told me to. And I just kind of looked at him. I turned around and looked at him like, first of all, you're not a main body do anything person from what I could tell. And if you wasn't made anybody do anything person, you wasn't making me do shit.
Nah, that comes from, you know, now as an older guy, that came from a moment of frustration and he felt like he put everything in.
I mean, now in hindsight.
How old was Irv at the time?
Only a few years older,
20?
Right?
Yeah, he was only a couple of years.
Like, he was a kid too. Like,
right. But Scythe, hindsight is 2020. We were both kids.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And in the same way that I say to myself, maybe I got too offended and wasn't open-minded enough 100%. To understand where it was coming from.
100%.
In the same sense, that's how I could, he may have said to himself, I doubt it because I know how he is, but he may have said, well, maybe that was too rash or maybe.
No, we know Irv, man. We know Irv. He's a wild boy. He's all energetic, crazy, says all this
right.
shit.
But
Irv is also like a guy who in his quiet time was like, maybe I shouldn't have said, you know what I mean?
I mean, you know what? I don't know. And I'll never
know. We can ask him.
Right. Scythe, by the way, we probably did ask him. We probably did ask him and don't remember. knowing us, we didn't.
No, but that shit is all like, yeah, man, that shit is all, we would like, I'm you know, his parents were telling him,
yeah.
His parents were telling him, get what you got to get. You know what I'm saying? Same way your parents were like, you got to make sure you stay safe and get what you know what I mean? Like everybody right. has like.
And at the end of the day, if I didn't learn anything else from it, I definitely learned that if you believe in something or if you believe in someone, then just believe and just ride. And maybe had I seen it that way, maybe I would have overlooked the statement. Maybe I would have overlooked other things that kind of that statement and him saying it. That was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
But
like now as an adult, you'd be like, yo, you just said something crazy. I'm going to step out. I'm going to go home. We both going to go sleep on this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, yeah. Nice thought. Adult now, I'd have been like,
adult,
whatever, nigga. Like, call me tomorrow.
Bro. Right. Yeah, but this is also like the dumb advice people give in relationships when they're like, never go to sleep angry. It's like, no. Actually, sometimes it should be like, hey, babe, let's go to bed. Let's talk tomorrow. We're tired, done.
Man. We've been hungry and tired.
We've been in circles now all night. So was Irv then out by the time you finished? Not out. I don't mean out.
No.
But was he worked all the way through the natural in the same way?
The whole way. He was the executive producer. He kind of, to an extent, even though I wasn't signed to Top Dog, he became an A&R at TBT.
Right.
And I was his first project. So he kind of was you're going to do this with this producer, or I might say I want to work with this person, and he might be like, yeah or nah. And he was very intricately involved in, all right, yo, we're going to put this song on and that song's not going to be there. So even though I wasn't signed to Top Dog, he still had that level of control or autonomy over the project. And I think the only difference was, funny enough, that because I wasn't signed to his production, I actually had the ability to say, well, I don't agree with that and I don't want to do that, and so I'm not doing that. And that never happened because we kind of, like, when it came to making that album, we kind of saw everything for the most part eye to eye. There were a couple of producers that he didn't necessarily envision me working with, or that he didn't necessarily think, you know, like, well, you don't really need that. Well, his plan for me, or rather for what he wanted, was he kind of looked at Death Row as what a label should be, what a sound should be.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like to I don't mean it in the sense of like, you know, making a carbon copy of Death Row, but he kind of was like
moved.
Right. So he was using what Death Row was, what they put out, and how they were established. And that was kind of the template. And it was before Murder Inc. was Murder Inc. But I think he kind of looked at it like, okay, you see how them niggas is moving? That's what we gonna move like.
Right. Makes sense.
But you sound like you. Right. But I want you to do this, and I want you to do this. And some of those things we agreed on, and other things I was like, nah, that's, I'm not, I don't feel that. You know, but be, again, because I didn't sign the Top Dog, at the end I could still say, which was very rare, if any time at all, I could still be like, well, I don't agree with that, and I want to do it this way.
Well, for people who have, I'm sure there are people listening who love hip-hop, know the name Mike Geronimo, never spent a ton of time with The Natural. So let's get into some of it. First of all, the names associated with this album that were a part of it in any way. Beat Miners, Buck Wild, which on Master I see those scratches are Rock Raider.
Rock Raider, yeah.
Which is rest in peace, which is incredible. Yeah. DMX, Ja, and Jay-Z are all on Time to Build, which Irv produced. You have another Buck Wild production at Three Stories High. You have OC on Men vs. Men, produced by Beat Miners. Another Buck Wild. You have The Lost Boys, Freaky Ty, rest in peace. Like, my favorite Freaky Ty moment, maybe, is on Master IC Remix. and by the way, and Nasheem Merrick produced on that with Harv Pierre, which is crazy.
Nasheem did that.
Yep. Nasheem did what?
He did the Master IC remix.
The remix, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Which is him on the Harv.
Yeah,
So this here, the second single, Master IC. Let's give everyone a little taste in case if you were under a rock for some reason. This is one of the most rap-looking rap videos of the 90s. I'm so high, you so high. I'll be getting money till the day that I die. Blush.
And we had no creators for that video. Like,
Say it again, Mike.
I said it is weird because we had no treatment for that video. Like, I think it was a Super Bowl Sunday, and I remember Hype Williams called me and he's like, yo, what you doing? I was like, yo, I'm watching the Super Bowl. And he's like, yeah. He's like, yo, we gonna film a video. And I was like, all right, cool. But I thought he meant like, you know, we got to start talking about, you know, filming the next video. Because Hype did shit's real.
Wow. By the way, Syph, did you know that till this moment?
I did. I did know that, and I forgot. When you just mentioned it, I remembered that he did those videos.
Yeah, Hype did shit's real on his little ass camera. It was like maybe 5 inches.
Wait, is Hype from Queens? Hype.
Nah, well, I don't know his origins, but
he was around Irv. Him and Irv.
I remember going to Jersey to see him. We would always go to Jersey. But yeah, and he's like, "Yo, we're gonna do a video for you know, man." Start seeing, I was like, "Okay, when you want to do it?" He's like, "Yo, come downstairs." And I was like, "What?" Yeah, come downstairs. And I came outside and there were like 3 trucks in front of my building. Yeah.
Wow. Had he done anything before this?
What, was this real?
Yeah.
I think he did. There was a group called it's not TA7. TA7 was like a gang in Queens. There was a group that had a song called Come Baby Come.
Oh, K7. K7.
Right. K7. So he shot that video for K7.
Yo, that's wild. I did not realize. I did not realize he did that.
Yeah, he did K7, and I think he did something else. By the time Master IC came around, now he was doing stuff for Brandy and Usher and Bad Boy.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, the equipment and the trucks, because when, like I said, he told me come outside, and I went in front of my building, and he had like three gigantic 18-wheeler trucks in front of my building. And he's like, yo, go call all your friends. We're going to shoot a video right now. And I was just like, what? And he's like, yo, go call everyone now. So we just went down Colden, and I called Flush, and I was like, yo.
Oh, I know exactly what happened.
Yeah, and I told, I was like, yo, just, we just started calling people. We called the Lost Boys. We called, you know, like family we had at Southside, people in Corona, left, right. We just started calling people. And then, it turned out that the equipment was for either Brandy or Usher.
One of them had,
I think it was either the All I Do video or the remix for Brandy for I Want to Be Down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was her video. So he took the equipment, and he was supposed to turn the trailers and the trucks and all the cameras in. He didn't.
Right.
He held all the equipment and shot Master IC.
One day, right?
In one day. And we shot the trailer for what would become Belly. So in between shooting Master IC.
Pause, stop, slow down. What the fuck did you just say?
As we were filming Master IC, Belly is like loosely based on one of our people. Like, shout out my man Monday. But the story of Belly is loosely based. And Monday, originally I was supposed to play Nas' role.
Wow.
Because Monday was like, Mike is just like such and such. Like, if anybody should be, it should be Mike. So during Master IC, we shot like a maybe 20-second trailer of
clip
that they used to sell the screenplay and the idea of the movie Belly to the production or the movie company.
Right.
And so that's how they got the green light and the funding for Belly.
And
they
is crazy.
Yeah.
Yo, Mike Geronimo is like the Forrest Gump of hip hop. Like,
you are not the only person who has said that, and I laugh when people say it. Now I like crack up when I hear it because I'm like,
yo, yeah, you it keeps going. But like, Saif, I already thought that, and then he mentions that Hype Williams did Shit Is Real and Master IC. Yeah. I'm like, wait, how much different shit weaves through the beginning of your career? It's just
it's so fucking weird, bro. Like, and it's just bug, because like I said, if I look at it, all is crazy, because the first person I ever knew coming outside of my house was Large Professor, because he lived right next door to me.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Flushing.
And so my mom's like, you know how you'll have, you know, you have the older dudes that might be.
You know about Paul from next door?
Yeah.
That's right. Like, my mom's would be like, who you outside with? I'd be, Mom, with Paul. Oh, okay, you can stay outside till the lights come. So if Large was outside, my mom was okay with me being outside.
He had glasses.
Yeah, he had glasses.
Right. He sleep with somebody with glasses.
Exactly. Him and my man Van. My man Savannah. And Van is Nas's daughter's sister. That's Van's sister. I mean, Nas's daughter's mother, Carmen, grew up with us too. So all these people were in my daily circle of existence. And my mom passed away, and I ended up moving, and I live in Corona, and I live in East Elmhurst for a bit, and then I finally settled in like Southside, and then we moved to Bayside, and lo and behold, there's all these people that are in my mix. to have something.
So Large Professor is when you're like 8, 9 years old.
Yeah, Large is like who taught me about Fat Laces and Pumas and going down Main Street and getting my name buckle with my.
How old was he at the time?
Large was maybe 2, 3 years older than me, but he just had an old soul. You know what I mean? He just seemed a lot older than what he was. So, wow. But Lord put me on all of that graffiti, windbreakers, gazelle glasses, Kangols. What's the shirts? The BBD shirts.
Yo, how did he not?
You kept in touch all those years after? Like, mm-hmm. You know, okay, that's crazy.
How does he not have a song on the album? All right, you know what we need to do here, Syph? Let's stop.
I know exactly what we need to do.
We need to stop for a second. Mm-hmm. And this is the time when we say, hey, fuck faces. We do a Patreon show. Yeah. And if you want to get things like, I don't know, another hour and change with Mike Geronimo.
I like that we foreplay you. You know what I'm saying? We get you all hot and steamy and ready to go. And right when we're about to spelunk it, come on, baby. Come on, baby. Come on down to that Patreon. Come on down.
Yeah, this is a good one. And there's a lot more here. And the way his story ends, too, is...
I had no idea it would be this good.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I really didn't.
I didn't know where the story went. It was because, you know, Syph and I do no preparation. So we obviously don't know where the story's going to go. We just wait and hear it. So anyways, thank you. We love you guys. Head on over to patreon.com/JuanEpIsLife.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.